To see examples of what we talked about on the show, along with further information, go to bunchofdorks.com.
Like I said, I just watch the USA. I don't watch any of the other ones because it's like I don't have any rooting interest in them.
Yeah. I just, you know, listen to a couple here and there. Shit, hold on. I'm trying to call Ron, but call failed. Try one more time.
I hope Ron shows up because I haven't read any comics. So
I'm here.
Yes.
All right.
I don't really know how great I'm going to be because I haven't read a whole lot lately either. I've been trying to finish the last Game of Thrones book.
Oh, man. Dude, how about that?
We can talk about that.
Ron, man, how about that episode last night?
Oh, man. I liked it and I'm pissed all at the same time, man. I'll be honest with you. It was a cool episode, some cool stuff, but I'm also kind of let down as well. So I'm kind of torn right now.
I'm in the unique.
Where they kill somebody, one of your favorites.
Oh, they killed a ton of people.
Yeah, that's the deal. That's the same with Walking Dead. They just kill people.
No, I'm in that unique position where I haven't read any of the books. I mean, I'm on maybe chapter 2 or 3 of the first book, A Game of Thrones. But it's fun because I have no idea what's going to happen on the shows, and I know it's different than the books, but I have absolutely no clue. Like,
yeah, I don't know about the animated skeletons. They kind of threw me off a little bit. So
I'm not used to such a big fantasy element. Like, it felt like it suddenly turned into The Hobbit. You know what I mean? Like, it was hardcore fantasy. You had a lot of magic being thrown around. You had skeletons.
I had a big Harry Hamlin moment last night seeing those.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Harryhausen, yeah.
Harryhausen, sorry. Excuse me.
Hey, that's a great movie, man. Jason the Argonaut.
Exactly.
What reminded me of. It was like so Jason and the Argonauts.
I agree with you, Rook. Like, that's, I totally thought that, too.
I couldn't focus, you know, on that. I was just kind of like, that kind of threw me way off on that. So
it's an homage.
You know, I mean, it was good animation, but, you know, I just kind of, you know, hey, look what they're ripping off.
yeah, but Harryhausen did it by hand. They're doing the CGI.
Yeah,
so.
Harryhausen's will always be, to me at least, just infinitely more compelling. Just the fact that he was able to do that. I mean, every single little frame did it. What's that?
Well, that was all the. That's the beauty of stop animation, though, because that's what he did. That was all stop animation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, much like Entire Nightmare Before Christmas movie was.
Yep.
So, you know, I've got a special place in my heart for stop animators because I did stop animation in elementary school. So,
well, Ron, did you see that one? I think I talked about it on the show, but there's that Ray Harryhausen documentary on Netflix that is
it's great,
wicked,
it's
awesome.
Great.
Yes.
Yeah, and you know, actually, that's on. Welcome to the summer. My child has left the building.
Oh,
he's gone for month and a half. So that's actually on the list of things to be watching while he's away. So,
well, I think this would probably be a good time to introduce ourselves, huh?
Yeah.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Two Dimension Comics, the podcast with no direction. This is episode number L.
Oh, God, 94 probably.
I don't know. It's 92 or 93 or something. It's
way up there.
This might be episode.
It's 90 something.
Yeah.
I think it's 93.
What Al thinks is episode 93. I am your very exhausted and confused host, Dallas Busha. And as you heard, tonight we have my my fellow trustworthy podcasters. Guys, introduce yourselves.
Al.
Oh, is this my turn? I don't want to introduce myself. People know who I am.
Click.
It's Rook. Hey, everybody.
Oh, boys. Well, welcome back, guys. Rook and I haven't been on the show in quite a long time. The last time I was on was probably with you, Ron.
Probably. Yes. Probably.
But damn, how the hell are you guys doing? It's been a while.
Yeah, man. Good.
I'm here listening to this thunder. Oh, geez, and here go the dogs. Sorry, guys.
Who let the dogs out?
Yeah, it was pouring over here.
Was it really? Oh, okay. It wasn't raining here. It was thundering a little bit.
Was it? Yeah, I think I'm about to get hammered any time now. So
I just might.
Lovely weather.
Well, speaking of which, seeing as we're about to enter the amazing season of summer, I thought tonight I'd fill up on a sweet summer shandy. You guys know what a shandy is?
No. A drink, I'm assuming.
It's a drink. It's a beer mixed with lemonade. And the one I'm drinking is by the company Linenkugel, and it's their actual summer shandy, it's called. And it's pretty delicious. Hmm. It's really nice and light-bodied because it's an ale. And I thought it would be perfect for tonight because I thought it would be still kind of muggy and hot out, but apparently it's pouring, which is awesome.
Huh. Okay.
Yeah. Fortunately, all lawn is mowed before this friggin', you know, you gotta love the summer in Florida. It's like, hey, we're bright and sunny. Oh, nope, torrential downpour.
Yeah.
So
pretty much like clockwork, every day at around 3 or 4, you know it's gonna pour.
Yep, pretty much.
So comic books. Right.
Oh, yeah.
Anybody read any?
What? No, I thought this was a meteorology podcast.
Yeah, I thought this was everything but comics. This is the podcast of no direction, right? Don's going to be like groaning when he hears this episode. He's like, these guys can't even get the episode number right.
Probably.
That's the last time I put you in charge.
Well, we said 93 or 94, so it's, you know, we're probably half right.
Well, look, I'm sure this is going to lead into comic books somehow, but Rook, just a minute ago you were saying your son Chris, he's gone for the summer. You want to talk about that? What's your plans for the summer?
Oh man, actually you will love what I have planned for the summer. As soon as I finish the current Game of Thrones books, Dance with the Dragons, I picked up yesterday Lock and Key.
Dude, I'm so happy for you. Listen then. I'm not going to review the book today because I was kind of thinking about it. I'd much rather you read it.
Yep, don't.
You read it first.
Okay.
Then let's talk about it and review it together for the audience.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Because I decided that was my summer reading list. I'm going to finish this novel and then I'm diving into the Lock and Key universe. So.
I like the cut of your jib, buddy.
Yes, sir. Don's not here, man.
Don's not here.
Hey, Alex. Yep. Lock and Key?
Never. I've heard of it, but I've never seen it before.
No? Okay. All right. So the reason I picked it up is because Brittany at the comic book shop suggested Rat Queens, and we all remember how much I loved Rat Queens.
Yes.
She also is a big Lock and Key fan. So I said something to her about, you know, about something else good to read, and she goes, well, pick up Lock and Key, you'll like that too. And then Dallas shortly thereafter picks up Lock and Key and talks about how he loves it. So I'm like, all right, you know what, there's two people that I know, I trust, and so I had to go pick it up the other day. So, or was that, yeah, whenever the heck it was.
Well, I just recently finally picked up volume one. A couple of years back, I picked up volume 4, I think it was, and I was hooked. The first chapter in it is this stunning and lovingly rendered homage to Bill Watterson and Calvin and Hobbes. And that might sound a little out of context, but when you read the book, it makes sense. And they hooked me on the first page. And
you know, Watterson just came back and drew a few strips.
He did, yeah.
Actually, I was just about to mention that. What was the strip that he started working with?
It was Pearls.
Pearls Before Swine. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, I read an article from the guy who writes that normally, and he's like, you know, getting to work with him. He's like, here's my idol. This reclusive, very hard to get a hold of, you know, genius of comic strips. And he said he was talking about how like amazing the entire process was with Watterson.
That's great. I read it. There were three strips, 3 days in a row, where Bill Watterson did one, sometimes two panels for him. And I think the premise was one of the characters in the comic strip, he was making fun of some young girl that was a teenager saying, you can't draw. And then he finally let her draw a strip, and she would draw something and show it to the guy, and what she showed was Bill Watterson's work, whatever he did for the comic strip. Yeah. It's really cool.
Yep.
Now.
Yeah, well,
the guy who normally does the strip said he's very self-deprecating in his work. You know, he's always making fun of himself and how crappy he draws and everything. So, you know, like one of his concept was that he got hit on the head and suddenly was able to draw, but the drawings were actually going to be Watterson's instead.
Oh, okay. Well,
yeah. And very, very, very interesting article, though. I think I posted it on the group page on Facebook.
Well, Mike,
do you guys read comic strips at all anymore? Like in the newspaper or anything like that? Do you read any of the comic strips anymore?
There's a couple web comics here and there that I'll look at, but not really much.
Yeah, I'm just wondering how those stay afloat. You know, I guess, you know, everybody wants a little chuckle every day. I guess, you know, there's still like a few. Peanuts is always reprinted. Yeah. I'm just wondering, you know. I mean, I get like this thing every once in a while, which is like a collection of the daily strips. But I haven't seen a newspaper in I don't know how long. So
well,
I don't know who reads.
Yeah, that's the same. I really haven't seen a newspaper in a while. You know, my wife gets them, cuts the coupons out, and then the paper like suddenly disappears.
Ditto.
So,
Well, I want to throw out there, because we were talking about Watterson. Mike Colantonio posted a few weeks back. He's one of our fans on the Facebook page. On the Two Dimension Facebook page, he posted a link or was talking about a really good Bill Watterson documentary that's on Netflix. And I watched it the other day, and it's about Watterson and Calvin and Hobbes, basically, and the impact that Calvin and Hobbes has had on, you know, on popular culture. And it's a really good documentary. It's new. It came out, I want to say, either the end of last year or beginning of this year. And it's definitely worth checking out.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, nice. I saw it. Nice. I put it in my queue, but I haven't...
Yeah, it's on the streaming Netflix, so you can go grab
streaming.
It. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of good documentaries on streaming Netflix. There's a lot of music ones and stuff like that. It's definitely worth checking out. But they're hard to find. They're hard to find unless you know what you're looking for.
Yeah, a question for you guys. Have either of you watched the Metallica movie?
No, but I've seen clips from it.
Like the old Cliff Burton one?
No, the new one, the Through the Never, or whatever the heck it was called.
I think it's on Netflix.
Yeah, it is on Netflix, and I keep like scrolling past it going, oh, God, this must be horrible. I haven't talked to anybody who's actually sat down and watched it, so I don't know how bad or how great it really is.
Now, I watched the other one, the one where like James Hetfield had a nervous breakdown or whatever. You ever see that one before? Yeah. Some Kind of Monster or something like that. I saw that one, but I haven't seen the new one. I read something about that they staged like an accident on stage with one of the roadies or something. I don't know. There's a brief description on Netflix that's kind of strange, but I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
I watched the documentary on Lemmy, though. That was pretty funny.
Oh, the Lemmy. Yeah, I saw that one. I really want to watch that one, too.
See, every once in a while they play it on VH1.
Who'd win in a fight, Lemmy or God?
Lemmy.
I'll say God, Lemmy will give him a good run, but I'll go God.
You got sweet mole on Lemmy's face.
Yeah, it's lovely.
No, trick question. Lemmy is
Chicks
God.
Love it.
That was from Airheads with Adam Sandler Brandon Fraser. Yeah. Yep.
Never saw that one.
Oh, it's hilarious. You'd probably get a kick out of it, Al. It's funny as hell.
Yeah, we were watching some 80s thing on Slow Robot, some movie called Trick or Treat. You guys remember that one at all?
No.
Is this the one with the little pumpkin?
No, it's Trick My Ride, pumpkin. Right?
No. It's the one that's got Gene Simmons and Ozzy Osbourne in it in little cameos. You ever see that one?
Okay. I saw that one years ago, but there's another one, Trick R Treat.
Never saw that.
That one's a newer movie, fantastically done. And a few years back when I was up in Maryland at a cousin's wedding, come to find out I was hanging out with the guy who wrote it.
Oh, wow. Interesting. I've never seen that.
It was like halfway through the night when somebody leaned over and was like, yeah, have you seen his movie yet? I was like, who is he? And then somebody was like, oh, yeah, he made that movie. I was like, well, nope, but now I have to see it.
Yeah, no, this is like a total metal movie with like the guy who played Skippy on Family Ties, Mark Price. It's a goofy movie, but it was somewhat enjoyable. I figured you guys might have seen it, and then you're in the yeah, 80s or something like that.
I think I did years ago. I don't think I've seen it in quite a while.
It's total metal. They bring back some hair metal guy from the dead with like a record that spins backward and has backwards messages. Total
was
80s.
It was,
oh yeah, that's the 80s right there.
It's total 80s and mullets and chicks with big hair. Yeah, it was just like incredible. But yeah, we watched that the other day. That was kind of funny.
Nice.
God, there's comic book documentaries on Netflix. Well, Comic Book Men is on Netflix. You know, I don't know how many episodes of that there is, but I think there's another one about like a comic convention or something on Netflix streaming. I'm saying you might want to check that out.
Is Comic Book Confidential on there?
I think Art School Confidential is. That's a Daniel Klaus movie.
Oh,
you ever see that one?
No. Cool.
Yeah, you know, after Ghost World, they did another one of his movies, and it's Art School Confidential. It's not a bad movie. I don't like it as much as Ghost World, but it's not bad. It's pretty, you know, snarky and all that.
Ghost World was good. You know, I just read a Daniel Klaus book a couple weeks back. David Boring. Have you read that one?
I've seen it, but I haven't read it.
Oh, it's so good. It's a lot deeper and a lot different than Ghost World. But it's you can tell it's Klaus. You know, it's his style. It's his style of writing. Because he's got really that real sublime kind of dry humor and observational humor. But it's really, really good. You should check it out, Al. I think you'd like it, man.
Was it, you know, now that we're talking about all this, I guess it was a topic that I've talked about before, but I don't know if I talked with you guys about it. It's like my premise is, why buy comic books anymore? Because like I bought all 5 issues of the first arc of Afterlife with Archie, okay? Now they put out the trade paperback, and it's got so much extra material on it that I'm tempted to buy it. And I'm like, why did I buy the first 5 issues in the first place?
I think this is a good question for Rook, because Rook, you are still and always have been very passionate about the serialized version of comic books and having something new and fresh every couple of weeks or every month.
I am. I truly believe that, you know, comic books are meant to be read in bite-sized pieces. It's meant to hold your suspense for a month, you know. But I do understand where Al's coming from, because when trades come out now, they add in, you know, letters from editors and writers. And
it's basically,
you know,
like the special edition Blu-ray version, you know.
Yeah, it's like the special edition Blu-ray version. But to me, the singular issues are where a collector could possibly get his money back from, you know. Just for example, Chew number one, okay? Dallas and I were at the shop one day. Come to find out, I had a first printing of Chew number one that was worth like $300.
Nice.
So I brought it back to the shop, and you know, I sold it back to them, and you know, I got a really nice amount of money for it, and you know, I got some really good, really cool stuff off of that. Now, I wasn't a fan of the book, so I had no problem in doing that, because I just wasn't impressed by the book. It wasn't my thing. But as a collector, if I really like, for example, Wanted. I love the Wanted series. I have not read it in so long because I have first printings of all the books. So they sit in my boxes untouched. I won't let anybody. I've had a few people ask me, "Oh yeah, yeah, I really want to borrow
those."
Oh, hell no.
Won't anybody touch your box?
nobody touches my box. But
I'm gonna crack
the reason
code.
I don't let those out is because those are where the value is. Now, if I was to go and get the graphic novel, then I could reread the series again and I could lend that out. So that's where I think, you know, graphic novels are wonderful, is when, you know, you're trying to get friends into reading a particular series. several people over the years have shown their interest to me in reading Walking Dead, and I'll lend them the first graphic novel.
That's how
now,
I got
I had
into
the first
it.
Right. If I had the first issue of Walking Dead, would I lend that out for someone to read? Absolutely not. But I'll lend out a graphic novel much easier. I think graphic novels are easier to lend to people for shared reading experiences than singular issues. So, like I said, singular issues, they have that capability of suspense for the next issue, plus the ability to possibly become very valuable later on in life, too.
That's true.
Why that, I think the singular is important.
That's true, too, but it was just like this thing just came out, and it's got like the whole four issues, five issues. It's got all the variant covers. And it's also got like all the page layouts by the artist. So I'm like, holy crap! If I would have known this, what the hell did I buy the regular issues for? I would have just gotten it in one shot. Again, you know, buying single issues keeps the comic shops in business, so I support it. But it's a kind of a weird, you know. I mean, I'm buying the book twice is what's happening.
Yeah. One of the things that irritates me is that the graphic novels come out so quickly after a story is done.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, within a month or two of a story finishing, sometimes even less than that, you have the graphic novel. You know, it's kind of like, well, you know, that's kind of a slap in the face because I've been picking up all six of these issues for so long. Why is there not like a 6 month to 1 year wait before a graphic novel comes out? Because then it forces people to go in and buy those solo issues, higher revenues for those comic book shops that keep these companies in business. You know,
right.
That's my opinion. I think graphic novels shouldn't come out for like at least 6 months to a year after a series is finished.
Yeah, but you put up a good point. I mean, if it happens that the books are valuable, you just take them back, sell them back to the guy, and then maybe you can get that graphic novel for cover price and you didn't spend, you know, another $17 or whatever it is. But yeah, it's a weird thing, you know?
Well, I like the finality of the thing. I like having a big complete collection myself. And, well, I have, for instance, The Walking Dead. I have that omnibus and I enjoyed reading it, knowing I'm getting my money's worth because I have a book that's going to take me weeks, maybe months to finish. Same with the Stray Bullets I'm reading right now. I bought the omnibus. It's got the complete run in it. And there's something to be said about having it all in at your fingertips. It's a little unwieldy, but it's nice to know, even though I'm reading it in bite-sized chunks, I can just keep on picking that one book up and just get the entire story. So I think that's where Rook and I look at it a little different, which is fine, but I enjoy having a big, fat book.
Yeah, I mean, I know what you're saying, but it's kind of like, you know, you go to the comic shop every week and you buy stuff, and I hate buying it twice. You know, I mean, if I didn't buy it in the first place and then I'm interested in the storyline, it's like, oh, okay, great. I just bought it once, but I'm buying it twice now. And I'm kind of thinking I got a little snookered there.
Well, you got to pick a side. Are you Team Rook or are you Team Boosh?
I think I'm neither one. I'm undecided. I'm undecided on it. You know, I don't know the answer to that question. I mean, I could always pass on it and wait until like it's done and maybe hope that they put out a graphic novel or trade. But if it's something that I really want to read, you know, then, you know, let's put it this way. If they're going to give me a lot of bonus stuff, yeah, that's when it starts getting to the point of, yeah, I got to get it. But if it's just them serial, you know, reprinting the 5-issue or 6-issue arc with no bonuses, then who cares? You know, who cares?
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I agree with you there. And, you know, here's the other thing, though, with comic books. Not every storyline becomes a graphic novel.
No.
So, you know, you run that risk of, you know, here's an awesome storyline in your opinion, but nobody else gave a crap about it, and they never make a graphic novel out of it. You know, that's happened to me plenty of times. So,
well, and somebody like Don, I think, sees the merit in both ways. He enjoys getting the single issues, and he also likes, in other instances, to have a trade or something collected. And, you know, they're not exclusive to each other, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree with that, actually. I mean, you see my bookshelves, they're full of trades, you know, but yet then I have those obscene amount of boxes as well. So
to me, trades or collections are better for me anyway, personal thing, to get older books that I never was able to get when I was, you know, a kid, like some collections that I couldn't afford. And oh, well, now I got them in hardcovers or paperbacks and I can read them all. But when, like you said, it's something that just came out 6 months ago, but they're kind of like getting you by putting all this like bonus stuff in. I just kind of feel like, okay, I know next time I may not buy all the regular issues.
Well,
you know, for the next story arc.
And I think like what you're saying, big collections are great for academic purposes, for lack of a better word. If you're looking for something, some old books that were printed and you can't get your hands on now and have a big collection. I like having a big book full of the old spirit stories that used to be in the newspapers. You know, that's great to have as a comic book, as an avid aficionado of the art form. You know, it's nice to have a big collection of the artwork, and it's almost like a snapshot of that time back in the 40s.
And it's also something too with, like, when you mentioned the spirit, it happens with music too. They just keep re-releasing it in new formats, and you're kind of, a lot of times you're just buying it over and over again. I guess the main thing is to try to sell the original or the previous format. That way you're not stuck with 8 different copies of the same thing.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But then there's a lot of current books, and I would say probably from the Silver Age on, well, even a lot of books are meant to be read in serialized form, like from month to month. And a lot of books that you probably read, Rook, they wouldn't have the same effect if you read them all bundled together in one story. You know, you need that cliffhanger at the end of the issue that makes you wait for 2 weeks or a month. And that's the way it was written, was for single issues. And that's the best way to read those is piecemeal or is bit by bit.
Yeah,
well, especially
absolutely.
Something like The Walking Dead, which is like one storyline one basic storyline, not like, you know, going off and, you know, like one book, like a Marvel book may just go off in a completely different, you know, it's not based upon an apocalypse. Let's put it that way. It could be anything, you know.
And a month to month book also gives everyone the chance to discuss what's going on, you know. Where I think putting everything into a graphic novel, what you end up doing is you end up over condensing everything, and people can sometimes lose track of certain elements.
That's a good
or
point.
Or not realize something significant as it was, you know, reading the omnibus of Walking Dead, there were certain points in the singular issues that you got to the end of that issue and you sat there and went, holy crap, I got to wait a month to find out what happened or what's going to happen next. You know, where reading the omnibus, all you have to do is you have to flip the page. But for that next, these guys are reading the singular issues, you know, we're all sitting around going, holy crap, what do you think? Oh my God, what? No. And so, you know, everybody's kind of wigged out by it.
Well, and that's a good point. Oh, go ahead, dude.
You know, have that the suspense with a graphic novel or an omnibus, in my opinion.
And it's that social aspect. It's almost you've got that little community of friends that are reading the books month to month. So I missed out on that on The Walking Dead. However, as I was reading each issue in the omnibus, usually at the end of every issue, I'd be texting, you know, with Rook, and Rook and I'd be going back and forth like, I can't believe this just happened and blah, blah, blah. So, you know, you still got that.
You still have that, but it's, you know, I you know, with people who have already read through them, they're going back and going, oh yeah, yeah, and but then they're like, oh crap, I gotta bite my tongue because if I say this, I'll let something out.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to let the bag, you know,
right?
You don't want to be that spoiling the book for people.
So it's much more fun if you have, I think, when you have a group of friends that are all reading it at the same pace and going together, like watching a show, just like we watch The Walking Dead TV show together, and week by week we can talk about it, not knowing what's going to happen next on the show.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree.
Here's my next question. When you read a comic book, how often do you read it? Do you just read it once? Do you read it twice? Do you put it down and just go to the next one, or you go back and read them all over again? What's the, do you guys have like any pattern of anything like that? Or?
Well, look, before we get into this, why don't we take a quick music break and then let's just discuss the hell out of this.
Okay.
Okay. So real quick, I'm gonna bust it up here and I'm gonna play a song from my band, Dungeon Boss. This song's song's called Let Go Vertigo, world premiere.
Down, baby, I'm done.
hear our last 20 episodes, check us out on iTunes. Or if you want to hear older shows, you can always find them at our blog, bunchofdorks.com, and click on the Cyclops.
That was Dungeon Boss, and a song was called Let Go Vertigo. So, okay, before
Who's in the band Dungeon Boss? Can you let us know?
There's five of us in the band, and I play guitar. The other guitarist is named Brent, and he's been on the show before. I couldn't tell you what episode, but it was a long time ago. Al, you were on that episode.
Yeah, I was on that one, yeah.
And then we got a few other people. Rook knows them all. We're all pretty good friends.
Okay.
Yep.
Hanging out. You'll meet them all one day if you're lucky, Al. All
right.
Hey, you guys still doing practice at the storage shed on Tuesdays?
Yes. Come up. You got to come up there. Brent built a wall.
Nice.
With a door and two AC units built into the wall, so Ooh. That we're completely closed off.
Oh, wow. Beautiful.
It's really nice.
So you got AC in there now? You got air conditioning in
there
now?
Yeah, it's nice. It's beautiful.
Right on.
Al, I went up there for band practice one time, and I was sweating so bad, I felt like I was in a shower, okay?
Oh,
it was disgusting.
Yeah,
it gets rough. I am so happy that there's air conditioning now.
But yeah,
the times that I went there wasn't that bad. It was overcast, I think, when Don and I went up there. It wasn't that nasty, but I can imagine.
Well, we've got a bar in there now. We've got a digital projector set up. We've got a huge white sheet on the wall, and we're able to project movies and stuff. And we've got a PlayStation and Xbox in there, so it's all decked out, man.
By projecting, he means porn.
But you still got to go to the bathroom in the woods.
No, we have the key to key to the bathroom.
Okay, that's good then.
Well, look,
nice.
Before I so disrespectfully interrupted you before the music break, Al, you had brought up an awesome question that I think we should get into and talk about. You want to repeat that?
Yeah, I wanted to know, like, when you buy a book, how often do you read it? Do you go back to it? Do you read it once, put it down, wait for the next issue? Do you like read it again? Do you ever come back to it because it was so good? I mean, I just like the reading patterns or whatever. Because for me, I'll read it once and then I won't read it again maybe for like years or something like that. Unless I miss something, then I go back and, you know, try to figure out what I missed.
Yeah, I do the same thing. If I read a book once, I usually don't go back and read it unless I get like the next issue and they reference something and I'm going, well, wait a minute, what's going on here? And I got to go back and reread the last issue or the issue before that. That's actually going on with that damn Thor God of Thunder right now. I have a huge stack of those to read. And like the cover of one of the new issues threw me off because as soon as it showed the cover, I'm going, well, wait a minute, didn't he kill that guy like 7 or 8 issues ago? So I'm very confused. I have to go back, double check things before I can carry on. So, you know.
Okay. Yeah, that happens to me too.
Yeah, if I need to double check something or if I forget something and I'm thinking to myself, well, wait a minute, didn't this happen? Then I'll go back and reread. But for the most part, I read one time and set them aside, you know, into the boxes they go.
Well, for me, it's a case-by-case basis. But for the most part, I really try to reread a lot of my books. And especially if there's a long run by a certain writer or artist, you know, that I really enjoyed, I'll go back and try and read the whole thing. For instance, I'm trying to get through the entire Chris Claremont run in Uncanny. You know, I've read those issues millions of times. But there's also other books like Watchmen. For a while there, every single year I would reread it. And that's one of those books where the more you read it, the more you'll get out of it. I do that with a lot of, Grant Morrison stuff, or if there's a book that's really heady or real cerebral and it's over my head, I'll go back maybe a couple weeks or a month later and I'll reread it, you know, and kind of you'll see it in a different light because you've read the entire thing already and you pick up on a lot of stuff that you did in the first or second reading.
Now, okay. Dallas, are you talking about singular issues or are you talking about graphic novels that you reread?
I'm talking about both. But for the most part, I only read graphic novels these days or collections, you know?
Okay. Yeah. See, graphic novels, yes, I will reread the crap out of graphic novels. I think I've read Watchmen like 5 times in the last couple of years. Ultimates, the Marvel Ultimates, I've probably read that 2 or 3 times in the last like
4 years.
Oh, hey, can I borrow that?
Ultimates? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Thanks. Yeah, absolutely. I have the first three graphics of it, I believe. All right. So.
Yeah, as far as single issues, not so much for me, except for, like I said, specific runs. Joss Whedon did that run on Astonishing X-Men a few years back, and it's like the first 24, 25 issues or something. And I'll go back and I'll read them all, but I won't just go back and read issue 17, you know. I'd have to go back and I'd start from number one and read the whole thing.
Okay. All right.
And dead silence.
No, that's a good answer. You know, I was just wondering because, like, I'm like, you know, I'll go back. Sometimes it'll be years, but then again, I always liked individual stories. You know, a lot of times, but yeah, when they reference something, you always have to go back and see if you can find the book,
yeah,
or find the collection that it's in or whatever. But you're getting your money's worth, Dallas, because you're reading it a lot more times than I am, so good for you.
There's Cerebus by Dave Sim, that comic book.
Got 300 issues of that.
Yeah, wow. There's 300, and over the years I've been slowly collecting them in the graphic novel forms. Every time I get the next graphic novel, I go back to the first issue and reread the whole thing up to that point. And
wow.
Yeah.
You do know that Yancey Street is right now, I think they still have them, a couple of the first issues of Cerebus.
Oh yeah, I used to have them when I was young, and I like an idiot, I got rid of them.
Yeah, no, they have a couple. Well, they did last time I was paying attention to the wall. They had a couple of original, I think like the first two or three issues of Cerebus sitting there for sale.
Thanks, man. I'm gonna have to check that out. Sweet.
Yes. Speaking of Cerebus, have you ever gotten that other book that Dave Sim does now? It's got some weird name to it.
Oh, Glamour Puss.
I don't even know what the hell it's about.
It's, for the most part, initially it started as kind of just a farce. He would he wanted to practice drawing something completely different from what he was used to, and he would use magazines as reference and draw models and cars and things like supermodels, you know, and people
yeah,
off
that's what I saw,
and just
yeah.
write really ironic basically tangents. He would just kind of write about the industry and whatever he felt like talking about, and most of it wasn't in a cohesive story. You know, it was all tongue-in-cheek and either making fun of or talking about the industry and history and things like that. It was off the wall. It was really cool. And it eventually turned into short stories about chronicling Alex Raymond's life. And
I saw that, but I didn't know if that was the whole point of the book or not. It's about Alex Raymond now?
It wasn't initially. It was he stopped printing Glamour Puss. There was like 20 some issues, and it ended a few years back.
I didn't realize that. Okay.
Yeah, but it turned into like short little vignettes and turned into a story about Alex Raymond. And it's going to be a forthcoming graphic novel called The Death of Alex Raymond. And it's basically just chronicling Alex Raymond's death and the events leading up to it. Because apparently it's kind of a mystery as far as exactly how he died and who did what.
I didn't know that. That sounds interesting.
It's great. And it's in Dave Sim's fantastic art style, which reminds me of a lot like, you know, Mort Drucker and some of the old Mad Magazine guys.
Also. But he imitates other artists too, which I guess is as being ironic or being sarcastic or whatever, you know, whatever point he's making. Yeah.
It's ironic, but it's also an homage because you can tell he's got such a huge love for the art form and the medium.
Oh wow! So I have to look that up. I didn't realize that Alex Raymond died mysteriously. I didn't even know what he passed away from.
It was in a car accident, and the events leading up to it were always kind of like foggy, a little shady.
Questionable.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
huh.
Hey guys, I got to tell you about this one book that I just read. I actually picked up the first issue years ago. But I found it in a graphic novel on Free Comic Book Day and picked it up. It's called After the Cape. Have you guys ever seen this?
No.
I've heard of it.
Okay. After the Cape follows the story of this guy, Captain Gravity, who basically he's a superhero that gets kicked off of his superhero team for being an alcoholic. And
that would be Rook. So,
hey,
I'm just kidding.
I've never attended meetings.
Shit.
No, it's It's created by Howard Wong, plotted by Jimmy Valentino. Illustrators were Mark Rudy and Manny Tremblay. This is actually the first chapter. This is after the cape, How Far to Fall. And it talks about what happens to him, you know, after he's a superhero. You know, he's struggling with day-to-day life, the fact that he is an alcoholic. He has a family, a wife, two kids. You know, how do you make ends meet when you're no longer a superhero? So it's an interesting book. I'd highly recommend it. It's all high contrast, black and white.
Ooh.
So, you know, it's something that I'm definitely going to have to pass around the group and have you guys read. It's from Image Comics as well.
That's what we need to do. We need to get a group read together again, you know, where everybody reads the same book and we can have a good episode of talking about it.
Yeah.
Well, or find a book that all of us have or something along those lines.
There's that too.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
No, just want to pass this one around and have a discussion about it because it's – and I'm looking for the second part of it after the cape too. So if any of you guys run across it, let me know.
Okay. Is it a trade paperback or is it a regular, just an issue?
No, it's a trade. It's a trade. Oh, okay. I think there was like three or four issues of it. So, okay. Like I said, I had the first issue and I remember picking it up and going, oh wow, this is actually pretty damn good. I like this. And then like, it just fell off the map for me. Cause I think, I don't remember what was going on. Something big was going on with DC at that point, whether it was Countdown or 52 or something like that. So it kind of fell between the cracks during that time frame.
You were you mentioned the creative team. You said old Jimmy Valentino. Is that the guy from the Image days? Yeah. He had Shadowhawk or whatever that book
was. Yeah. And he also had Normal Man. Remember Normal Man from 100 years ago? I think it was Jim Valentino who did that one.
Was he? I remember Normal Man. I don't remember the creative team on it though.
So, I think it was him. Yeah. He's one of the old guys. He's one of the first Image guys. He's one of the guys that made all the bucks.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what. Look how far Image has come. I mean, they've always been a respectable company, of course, but I mean, they brought in their horizons sometime like maybe late 90s, early 2000s, and they have some of the most compelling books on the market now.
In truth, though, they weren't actually a respectable company. At first, they were kind of like the upstarts. They were this bunch of snot-nosed freaking little jerks that took off from the main guys and decided they were going to do their own thing and they're going to make their own publishing company. And, you know, everybody was like, oh, man, this is a joke. These guys are going to screw – they're going to screw it all up and they're going to be back working for Marvel and DC within the matter of like 6 months.
And by screw it all up, they kind of did.
Yeah.
Image Comics completely changed the industry. We went from the two to the three, and now we've got four: IDW, Dynamite, and then we've got five with Dynamite Press. We've got
Boom.
So many different Boom. You know, there's so many different publishers out there right now, and I really, in my personal opinion, I think Image Comics is the one that started the ability for indie or alternate concept comic books to kind of come out more mainstream and be more accepted by the readers of the big two.
I completely agree with you. I mean, I think what they did was completely amazing, especially considering their beginnings. And I'd agree with you to a point as far as the upstarts. Like, it was great that they were getting out there and they were doing their own thing for the love of comics. You know, a lot of people may not have necessarily enjoyed that, and it was very surface level kind of comics, but whatever. But the fact that they did that and, you know, allowed that company to breathe and progress and become what it is today. And yeah, look what a boon to the industry it's become. Thanks to Image, like you said, all these other big companies have come out and they've actually inspired Marvel and to an extent DC to bring a lot of indie creators onto big name books or big name projects. And it's great.
Yeah.
Well, Image now is pretty much of a publisher. I mean, in the sense that you give them a book that you're doing, and they decide whether they want to take it or not. And if they do, they distribute it. They put their name on it. you know, they print it, but you gotta, you know, you share the wealth with them. So,
and the creator kind of still owns the rights.
Who does?
Yeah,
the creator.
The creator.
The creator owns the rights. Yeah. Yeah, the creator owns the rights.
Well, and that's one of the most important things, because, you know, DC and Marvel screwed so many creators out of their rights over the years. You know, I mean, so many of the old timers, you know, they're living even nowadays hand to mouth because, you know, they got screwed out of their creative rights back in the day. You know, nobody realized that the creative rights of some of these characters were going to be a big thing, you know, in 20, 30 years. At that time, it was just, you know, making funny little comic books for kids to read. You know, nobody expected it to be a billion-dollar industry in 20 to 30 years.
Well, the movies are a billion-dollar industry. The books are like, you know, a million-dollar industry, I guess. But the movies are definitely what's taken. But you got, when you think of Marvel now, it's basically Disney, and DC is basically Warner Brothers. So they're, you know, they are what they are.
Yeah.
They still publish the little books, but they're mostly for making movies.
But still, think about some of the people that created these characters that they're making
Jack Kirby
movies
and
out.
All of them. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Well, they should be making some of that money too, because they created these characters, but they don't have the creative rights because, well, you know, back in the day, who kept their creative rights? Nobody cared about that.
Exactly.
Well, the Kirby family suing Marvel again. They're taking it to the Supreme Court over what they call the right to work or the contract, because there was no contract. So Marvel contends, mm-hmm. I think, that when you signed the check, you were giving away the rights. But when Kirby was doing it back in 61, there was no, like, you know, there was no nothing that said you signed away the rights to these characters. So I don't know if they're going to win or not, but, and, you know, Kirby's long passed away, but the kids are suing. And I know the kids of the creators of Superman got some ownership of some elements of the Superman mythology. So, you know, that's a whole different thing now.
Well, I'm wondering if any of these old creators are getting any even small sums or royalties off the movies.
Well, it's their kids. Most of them are dead. I mean, the real old ones, you know.
During the credits of The Winter Soldier, they had a huge block of creators that worked on Captain America. They thanked, you know, they thanked Gene Colan and Ed Brubaker and these guys. So I'm wondering if they're getting some kind of kickback.
Well, I don't know. I don't know. Brubaker probably, because he wrote it.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, yeah, I guess that's a little different there. But it was nice they paid an homage to people like Gene Colan. And the new X-Men movie, Days of Future Past, Chris Claremont, who was a writer for X-Men for, you know, 20-plus years, has a part in the movie. And it's not just a quick cameo. Like, it's not just a Stan Lee cameo. I mean, it's a bit part, but he plays a character that's in an extended scene, and he's got a lot of lines. So it's kind of neat they threw him in here, because this is the guy that wrote Days of Future Past. So this is his little his little nod.
Did you watch
the
movie?
I didn't know he was in it.
Did you see the movie, Dallas?
Yes.
How close is it to the books?
Oh, not really close at all. I mean, it takes the major themes, but it's completely different, but it's still fun as hell.
Nice.
Did you see it, Rook?
Yeah. No, I have not seen it yet, but I already know about the secret ending.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. That was great. We waited after the credits, and then we saw that. And I'm sitting there like a little kid going, oh my God, it's amazing. And Ellie's like, we waited for that.
Yeah, but she doesn't realize how important that really is.
Yeah.
So, but it's also very frightening to me to see where they might be going. You know, Apocalypse has such, I'm such a huge fan of the Apocalypse, the Four Horsemen, you know, that whole storyline series, you know, Cyclops and Jean Grey, the Ascani Sons, you know, all that, that was a big part of my X-Men.
Mm.
So I'm very frightened to see what they're actually going to do with Apocalypse.
Well,
aren't they going to end up doing the Infinity Gauntlet?
That's Disney. Or, yeah, that's Disney doing that.
That's with the Avengers and all that. I believe that's what they're working to, from everything that I've seen with the new Thor, the end of Avengers.
Oh, and Ash, definitely the end of Captain America, man. That was crazy.
I haven't seen that yet.
Oh, it's so good. I just want to say,
I haven't seen Winter Soldier yet.
Oh, Winter Soldier, for me, Winter Soldiers was head and shoulders a better movie than Days of Future Past. But Days of Future Past was really fun, and I'll keep my opinions to myself until you guys see it. But there's one jaw-droppingly awesome scene with Quicksilver in Days of Future Past that completely stole the show. Best scene of the whole movie.
Yeah. The only problem I have with Days of Future Past is that Blink is there.
You see her for about 30 seconds, dude.
Yeah, but she's an alternate universe character. She's from Age of Apocalypse.
Well, this is an alternate universe. It's a movie, you know?
I know.
No, it's not.
She's an Age of an Apocalypse character, man, you know? I mean, I don't know. I don't know. That kind of irritated me when I saw Blank. I'll be honest.
Well, I'll tell you, Colossus has some great scenes in it. It's fan service, I think, especially for somebody that enjoys some of those classic characters. Like I love the hell out of it just to see those guys on the big screen.
So what do you think of what the hell is his name? Channing Tatum? Or whatever. Yeah, that guy playing Gambit. What do you think of that one, Dallas?
Oh, I don't know. Yeah, I heard that. I can go either way with that. I can't imagine Gambit in a movie, so it'll be interesting.
Hey, Dallas.
Well, he was in X-Men Origin.
Yeah, I never saw that.
I'm sorry,
Dallas,
I'm stepping all over
for you. Do the X-Men, like in lately, do they ever relate to anybody else in the Marvel Universe, or are they just in their own little X-Men world in the comic books?
I don't know. I haven't read an X-Men book since Joss Whedon.
Oh, okay.
A versus X. Yes, that was the X-Men versus the Avengers, which was
okay.
just what, like last year, I want to say. So yeah, there's a lot of interaction. But honestly, it's almost to the point with X-Men that they are kind of their own universe. But the problem is that Wolverine shows up in everything.
That's
Wolverine's
right.
An Avenger. He's an East Coast Avenger. He's a West Coast Avenger. He's an X-Men. He's an X-Factor. He's an X-Force.
He's secretly in the Justice League.
Yeah, he's secretly in the Justice League too, even. Come on.
And they're gonna supposedly they're going to kill him off this year.
Yeah,
right?
I saw that. I'll believe that when I see it.
Yeah.
And Death of Superman all over again here, buddy.
Yeah.
Well, it's fitting because all these gimmick books are coming out now, so it's fitting they do that.
Yeah. Well, you know what they're going to do is they're going to destroy Wolverine down to a singular cell, a singular molecule, and that molecule will take like a year to regenerate, and Wolverine will suddenly reappear again, and he'll
yeah,
be talking
as,
about
as
how
he'll reappear a swamp thing or something. I don't know.
Yeah. No, but I'm telling you, that's what they're gonna do. They're gonna destroy him down to a molecule, and that molecule, that singular cell, is going to slowly regenerate, and it's gonna take like a year. And then somewhere deep in the X-Men mansion basement, you're gonna see Cyclops like standing over this like slowly regenerating skeletal figure, and you're gonna see claws on it. I'm telling you, mark my words, that's what's gonna happen.
You know, I would not be surprised one bit. That sounds completely feasible, actually.
That's it.
Well,
Now Marvel's hearing this and going, oh shit, we got to rewrite all this crap now.
Thanks a lot, Two Dimension. Well, guys, listen, it's about that time. We're up to an hour, so I think we should probably call it quits before everybody falls asleep on us and before Don blows his stack too much.
Before
I ruin any more storylines that haven't been written.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening to us and putting up with our ramblings. Al, Rook, it's been awesome talking to you guys again. It's been too long. And whatever episode this actually it does turn out to be, it's not too far from number 100. So I think a huge full-blown reunion is bound to happen very soon.
All right.
Yes.
All right, guys. Well, we'll call it quits for tonight, but you'll be able to find us back in about a week. So take care of yourselves. And until then, read more. Did I say the right thing? What do I usually say?
What?
Read more comics.
I say like something read more before comics. It. Okay. All right, ready? 1, 2, 3. Read more comics. Done.
We've already got us doing it.
You can find Al's other podcast, Slow Robot A-Go-Go, Dallas's webcomic, The Mighty Blue, and Al's blog, Destination Nightmare, on the sidebar of our blog at bunchofdorks.com.
And click on the Cyclops.